Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for this morning is Illinois School District Agency against Pacific Insurance. Mr. Eaton.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tim Eaton, and I'm here with my co-counsel, Patricia Spratt, and we represent the appellant, Illinois School District Agency, who I refer to as Agency. Your Honor, there are two appeals that have been taken in this matter. I'd like to address the second one first. After this court remanded the case back to the district court to consider whether or not the estoppel claim in the East Moline action was a covered claim under the Pacific policy, the court ruled in our favor that, in fact, it was a covered claim and then was setting the matter for damages. She ultimately ruled in favor of Pacific on a summary judgment that we were not entitled to any damages because of a verdict we'd received in Martin Boyer. A judgment was entered, and in that judgment it contained a $98,000 award that we had received earlier regarding the defense costs to defend a bad faith claim that had been brought by East Moline. That judgment, had not been appealed to this court in the first appeal. In a motion that was filed by Pacific after they saw this second judgment that was entered by the court, Pacific argued that this court had reversed that judgment, or alternatively, the district court in her finding with respect to the Martin Boyer verdict had extinguished it because of a set-off. And that simply is not true. In fact, that's the argument that's raised in their brief before this court as well. But this court said in its initial opinion that because Pacific had not filed a cross-appeal, the judgment against it and in favor of agency in the amount of $98,000 on the bad faith claim cannot be reduced due to the Supreme Court's admonition in Morley. And then this court went on to say, in the context of whether or not the Martin Boyer verdict could be used as a potential reduction of damages in any award entered against Pacific, this court said it can be considered as a reduction as it relates to the estoppel claim and any damages that the court would enter as to the estoppel claim, again limiting it to just any future damages that might be awarded by the court. So we respectfully submit to this court in our second appeal that the court's vacating the $98,000 judgment that we had earned that was not appealed with respect to certain claims earlier was error, and we would ask the court to reverse that judgment of the court, reinstate that $98,000 judgment.
So, Mr. Eaton, I have, I'm not sure if it's one question or two questions about this part of the case. The $98,000 judgment was on the Section 155
claim. That's correct.
Claim, right. So part of my question has to do with the nature of a claim under 155, whether it's really more like a tort claim and whether thus it's the same kind of claim as the claim for the failure to represent in the Martin Boyer case or all this other litigation that's gone on. And I guess, as I understand what the district court thought that really the agency's been made whole by the Martin Boyer recovery, and so it would be duplicative for you to keep that $98,000. And that's why I think it relates to my first question, whether it really is duplicative or not, and whether you are on sound ground to say, well, maybe we should wait and see how this all sorts out at the collection stage, which I thought was your position.
The latter is my position, Your Honor, to answer that question first. But secondly, it's unclear why the court vacated the $98,000 judgment. The Rule 60 motion that was filed by Pacific suggested it was a clerical error and then cited to this court's decision saying that it had been vacated, when clearly this court did not do that. Secondly, they cited to the district court's opinion that was entered following its decision that we had no damages in light of the Martin Boyer verdict. Again, it's not clear because she didn't reference that judgment at all in her decision. But with respect to the nature of the 155 claim, the defense costs that were awarded in the first proceeding not only related directly to the defense of the 155 claim, but also represented costs in defending other non-covered claims during that period of time that the Section 155 claim was pending. So the court parsed out a time period prior to the 155 claim being filed and after it was disposed of. So those represent damages relating to defense costs that relate to all the claims that were pending during that period of time. So I'm not sure it makes a difference that the nature of the 155 claim has a bearing on the actual cost. Eventually, Your Honor, what we would be seeking, and this is going to the first appeal, is that we believe we're entitled to all of our defense costs as to the equitable estoppel claim and other non-covered claims for those period of times that the district court excluded in the first judgment. Then at that time, we believe the issue of what we have received in any recovery from Martin Boyer becomes ripe, because at that time, we believe we're entitled to at least a portion of what we spent to obtain that judgment. And then also the $98,000 judgment, assuming it's intact, would have to be subtracted from the whole. And all of this could be worked out, any argument specific would have.
In other words, you should get the net of what you got out of the Boyer suit. Is that right?
That's exactly what we're asking for. The net recovery should be the only amount that should be allowed to be reduced from any judgment we would get from
now
Pacific.
It depends on how this Illinois equitable doctrine of one recovery plays out, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
And there seems to be very little Illinois law as to precisely how that would play out.
Well, Your Honor, what we believe, based upon the facts in this case, we believe we fall within two doctrines under Illinois law. One is the common fund doctrine, which I believe you're referring to, where in an instance where there has been a third-party action and there's an interest in both the party who's bringing the third-party action and then another party that would have an interest in that fund and would benefit from that fund. That has to be a second prong of that. That then the party who has an interest, who is not bringing that action, cannot just sit back and let that go forward and then claim an interest later without paying a proportionate fee of the cost obtained to get that verdict.
Very different situation than the usual common fund scenario, isn't it?
It is somewhat, but also that's why we cited Couch on Insurance in our brief, because, again, in a context where an insurer declines to seek subrogation, and then there is this third-party action. Again, the case law, insurance law, is that they are required to pay a proportionate share. And I would like to quote to this court from its paragraph 16 of the amended complaint. And actually, it's part of this record, and it's docket number 126. Pacific was approached in 2001, 2 years after the Martin Boyer case had been filed in 1999. And agency said, why don't you take over the cost of defending this lawsuit? Because ultimately, what we recover from Martin Boyer will have an effect on what we would potentially recover from you. Pacific's response: Pacific does not wish to participate in this lawsuit and therefore declines the request of ISDA to pay for any of the legal expenses incurred or to be incurred in the prosecution of this matter. Pursuant to this declination, Pacific waives any right of subrogation it may have to any settlement or judgment ISDA achieves. So that's the context that we have here. When then later, after they refuse to pay anything, proportional or otherwise, to pursue that action, they now say that they're entitled to have that as a basis for a reduction in any potential damages that we may have against them in our lawsuit. And the district court agreed with them on the basis that they didn't have an interest in that verdict. They didn't have an interest in what we deem as the common fund, the verdict that both agency and Pacific had an interest in. And we respectfully disagree with the district court's conclusion on that, because obviously Pacific has taken the position in this case that they do have an interest and that eliminated any damages that we may be entitled to when they filed their motion for summary judgment. So it's our belief that under Illinois law, under the common fund doctrine, and under specific insurance law, where they had the right to subrogate in and control the cost of that proceeding. They can't then later say, well, even though we chose not to do that, we want the complete benefit in terms of, I hesitate to use the word set off, although that's been used below, because in Illinois law this is not a set off because it's not a competing claim. It is a reduction in damages from any verdict
we
would receive.
So on remand, under your view, what steps would the district court follow?
Under our view, we would ask that we be entitled to go forward and prove our damages against Pacific based upon those claims we did not receive defense costs for earlier. Once that judgment is determined, then in post-judgment supplementary proceedings, we can argue about whether or not we had a double recovery or not. And at that point, we can consider the net recovery we received from Martin Boyer, the $98,000 award, any interest issues that need to be ironed out, and at that point, that would be the relevant point in time. And we believe that we would still have a judgment over and above anything else that would be reduced from that.
Now, isn't that because, if I'm remembering correctly, the expenses that you are alleging you were put to get the Martin Boyer recovery were more than the recovery?
That's correct, Your Honor.
$100,000 as opposed to a $500,000. So you think that when this all nets out, you're going to wind up with a payment from Pacific coming your way?
Yes, we do. And that affidavit was attached to our response to Pacific's motion for summary judgment. Pardon me?
You're into your rebuttal.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor, and I'll save the remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Eaton. Mr. O'Malley?
Good morning. My name is John O'Malley. I represent Pacific. I'd like to answer one of the questions that you asked this morning, and that was whether the $98,000 judgment is included within the $564,000 that we're talking about. And the answer is absolutely yes.
But when has anyone ever really made that finding? Now, I was looking at 155, trying to think what this bad faith kind of claim under Illinois law really includes, and I'm worried that the district court, perhaps in a commendable desire to be efficient and to save time, may have jumped over too many interim steps.
And Judge, there actually was never a 155 judgment entered against the ISDA. What that 155 claim was for in this litigation was attorney's fees that the ISDA incurred in defending the Section 155 claim. I believe that the ISDA prevailed in the underlying East Molina action on the Section 155 claim. So what we are talking about is solely attorney's fees.
But why? I guess I should probably defer to Judge Ripple in part on this, but looking at the language of our earlier opinion, it certainly looked to me as though the $98,000 155 claim was not on the table at that point, and we went to some lengths to say that.
Well, Judge, what that was attorney's fees. It was a segment of the $564,000 in fees.
Well, I understand that, but I guess what I'm actually asking myself, and this is a much broader question than the $98,000, is suppose everything had gone the way it should have gone. You know, people defended when they should have defended and everything was done properly. What would be the position right now of agency? And I think their theory is that if they hadn't had to spend all that money pursuing the Martin Boyer claim without Pacific, they wouldn't have had to spend all of these funds. And if we can kind of roll the clock back and rerun time and see who would have been spending what, That's how they come up with this idea that their net recovery also has to include their fees for pursuing Martin Boyer.
Well, that is certainly their argument, and this is a case sitting in their...
What's wrong with that perspective?
Well, there's two major problems. First is absolutely unprecedented under Illinois law. Every case you will ever see regarding reduction of fees, including their own case, Matusita, involves a case where the attorney's fees weren't taken into account. Right now, over in the Daly Center, there are jury trials going on, and there will be reductions of judgments from a jury trial based upon a previous settlement. And there isn't a single case in the Daly Center or in this court sitting in diversity where the attorney fees that have been incurred in reaching that settlement have been taken into account.
Oh, well, certainly for general litigation, I don't disagree with you at all. I mean, we have the American rule. People pay their own fees. But insurance litigation has a set of special rules.
And the rules here, I don't believe that the ISDA has ever made that argument. And I think if we take a step back to what they argued in opposition to our motion for summary judgment, at no time did the agency ever claim that that $98,000 judgment existed. They argued the opposite. They argued it today. They mentioned it today. What they argued was it's premature. What we have to do is go through these steps. You have to get a judgment, and then it's supplementary proceedings.
Well,
that
right.
was their argument. And it was only until we had the error from the clerk, and it was a clear error, and I don't believe that there's very much ground to dispute that, because the second amended judgment that came out.
Well, do you think the first judgment for the $98,000 is still in place?
Your Honor, I believe that that $98,000 judgment is subject to our argument that they have been made whole.
Now, I don't understand what you're saying, though. Do you think that when all is said and done and people start collecting money, the $98,000 judgment exists?
The $98,000 judgment is subject to our argument that there is a
settlement. But when the district court amends the judgment paper, and I understand your argument about which paper the clerk grabbed and so forth, but this amended judgment in a civil case that doesn't mention the $98,000, do you think that's just incomplete, or what happened to the $98,000?
If I can read from this court's earlier opinion, what happened to it is this court said that on remand, Pacific can come forward with such evidence and re-argue that a recovery should be barred as to any judgment granted by the district court on the estoppel claim. And what that means, and what in fact we did under this opinion, is we made the argument, Your Honor, they have, to Judge Scott, Your Honor, they have been made whole. This discussion towards the end, and the reason that the district court declined to determine whether a recovery from both Boyer and Pacific would bar the claim, was because the agency had not been paid at that point. And when we came before the Seventh Circuit and argued it, the agency had not been paid at that point. When we filed our motion for summary judgment, $564,000 had been paid. And that's very important, because that $564,000 that had been paid included every dime of that $98,000.
Well, that's what's unclear. We have no finding from the district court. No paragraph that you can read where the district court explains exactly why that's the case.
I believe the reason for that is it was never disputed in the district court. During the first trial, their witness testified that the $564,000 worth of damages were the $564,000 worth of damages he put on in the Boyer case. We made that argument before the Seventh Circuit, and we made it in the motion for summary judgment, and it was never disputed. There is absolutely no question that the ISDA, but for perhaps the reply brief, for the first time, is now making the argument that it was a general verdict. And there's a question, perhaps, that the $98,000 wasn't included within that $564,000. Again, that was not raised in the summary judgment motion. It was not raised in any post-judgment motion. It wasn't raised in their initial brief. The first time you will see this argument raised is in their reply brief. And had they made it in the district court, there certainly would have been in a position to argue that was what their witness testified to at trial. That is what our statement of undisputed facts say. And they've never come forward with any evidence, because there is none.
But I'm looking at their opening brief on page 30, and they certainly seem to be arguing that it was error to eliminate the agency's $98,638.66 damage award. So it's tough for me to see that this just pops up in the reply brief.
Well, I think the argument, I was answering the question, I thought I understood you to say there was no evidence or finding by the court that the $564,000 wasn't, in fact, for the defense cost incurred in defending the East Moline case. There is absolutely no question. They might say it's an error because they contend now on appeal, not before Judge Scott. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. Their argument was, Judge Scott, this is premature. There's no judgment existing. So we went down the road that they laid. And it wasn't until we had an erroneous clerk error, and I don't think it could be really gainsaid that it was an error. It did not refer to the judgment. But I want to take, if I can,
back to really what, I mean, I think the critical issue here, I understand your position is these really are all for the same purposes, but I think that's the central issue, is that $98,636, you know, I think of Venn diagrams. Is it a 100% overlap, or is it a partial overlap, or exactly how much does it overlap with the Martin Boyer recovery?
That $98,000 is included totally. If we are taking the Martin Boyer recovery, that $98,000 sits directly within, and there is nothing at all outside of it. Nothing at all. And I think that's important because, again, until we had this clerk's error, the agency never raised it. They were arguing it was premature. But I think if it makes sense to take a step back, what the agency is suggesting doesn't make a lot of sense. They're arguing, well, we should go back and reverse on the $98,000. Well, I still have the same argument I'm making here. You've been made whole. They have been made whole. And it doesn't make any sense, I think, from a standpoint of a judicial economy, for me to go back and make the same argument that I've already prevailed on before Judge Scott and make it two separate ways. It just doesn't make sense.
Mr. O'Malley, suppose that the Martin Boyer litigation had never been brought, or supposed that agency lost the Martin Boyer litigation. What would have happened on remand?
What would have happened on remand?
In this case.
Well, we certainly would have gone back and made the additional arguments we had, including that a great percentage of their fees were not recovered. But it's hard to guess that hypothetical because from the inception of this litigation, we have been talking about and actually saying, why don't we stay this matter pending the outcome in Martin Boyer? I've made that motion at least three times, and I thought it made judicial sense at the time to stay our proceeding pending the outcome in Martin Boyer. And I want to point out something that's very important. Counsel talks about, and actually read from a letter, I think he said was in his pleading, but what he omitted was something very important, was they went ahead and sued us, claiming reimbursement of the fees they incurred in going after Martin Boyer. Well, we filed a motion for summary judgment on that, and they conceded. Those funds that they are seeking to offset our offset, if I can use those terms, we have summary judgment on that. They did not appeal it. They did not contend at all in the district court that we weren't entitled to judgment on it. So what they are asking is to take the $564,000 and also this $600,000+ upon which we have summary judgment and go back and use that money to make some sort of a reduction of our reduction in judgment. The problem is we have summary judgment on that. That was the first case. It was affirmed. Well, it was not appealed. So, in other words, they're trying to resurrect this dead claim. If they thought they had this argument that there was, for example, a common fund or whatever other argument they want to raise, they had to have raised it back before we got summary judgment on it. They didn't raise any of these arguments. Now we have this very large chunk of money upon which we have summary judgment, and they're coming back and saying for some reason that there exists a common fund. And I think it's very important, number one, we never saw nor have we ever claimed a single dollar from the recovery in Martin Boyer. And I will explain the reason it's $650,000 or something is because, in fact, the agency was seeking millions of dollars against Martin Boyer. But the $564,000 we are talking about were the identical trial exhibits from Martin Boyer were placed in a binder and handed to Judge Scott in the trial. And their witness testified on the record that's precisely what happened. So I wanted to stress that point at the end, and I think going back, the Judge Scott was completely correct. It certainly did not abuse her discretion in granting the Rule 60 motion. It had to have been done, because that February order, which brings us all here today and that we've been talking about at length, was not referenced in that judgment order, and that was a significant impediment. But at the end of the day, for the purposes of judicial economy, the suggestion for the agency that perhaps this court should reverse that part and we should go back to Judge Scott and have Pacific raise the same argument it had raised before, namely that every single dime of that $98,000 is included in the 564, doesn't make any sense. So thank you very much. If you have any other questions.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Eaton? I bet the answer is yes.
Could I ask how much time I have? 3.5 minutes, okay.
Mr. Eaton, if I may just use a few seconds of that to ask your question. I gather your view is that the judgment you received on the statutory claim is inviolate. That stays in place.
Yes.
And you get a chance. You get a chance now to litigate your estoppel, your equitable estoppel claim. You add the two of them together. You subtract the net recovery from the Boyer claim. You get a figure.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor, because I believe, as this Court held in its opinion, and I would cite actually to the same passage that counsel cited to, that on remand, Pacific can come forward with evidence and re-argue that a recovery should be barred as to any judgment granted by the district court on the estoppel claim, because they did not appeal from the $98,000 judgment. And, Your Honor, again, as they did in their brief, Pacific confuses the issue with respect to our withdrawal of the claim that we made in the district court for the Martin Boyer fees from Pacific based upon our claim that it was covered by the Pacific policy.
Yeah, that's this passage. I mean, it's on page 22 of their brief. The agency now concedes that the defendants are entitled to judgment on the agency's claims for reimbursement of costs in the action brought against Martin Boyer, right?
Absolutely correct. Well, we said we had a direct action against them, Your Honor, under the policy. We withdrew that, but we didn't withdraw any position that ultimately we couldn't use that as to argue as far as a reduction in the claim. And that is a difference. We were saying
a distinction between an affirmative recovery and a claim reduction?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and that was absolutely the difference. And with respect to, well, we didn't even raise the $98,000 in response to their motion for summary judgment. They never mentioned it. We didn't think it was at risk because of this court's opinion. Judge Scott never mentioned it earlier with respect to whether or not that was still in play. So he's right. We didn't mention it. But that's not a waiver. It wasn't in play. She wasn't able to reach that judgment because of this court's decision. So we don't believe there was a waiver in either instance, and respectfully request the opportunity to go back down, prove our damages, then we'll deal with these other issues later, and to have this court reinstate the $98,000. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.